This is tape recording number 6207, C-17, a lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 17th of July, 1962. The title of this lecture is E-Meter Reads and ARC Breaks.
And this is Watt. This is the 17th. 17th July, AD 12, first lecture, St. Hill, special briefing course. Okay. Well, not much to talk to you about tonight. You're all straightened out on everything. And got it all taped. I'm glad to see that. As soon as you get some glasses and some magnifying glasses. There's some possibility that your focal distance can coincide with the point of the needle, so don't despair. Don't despair. Mary Sue had a speed flash system going. They teach them how to read in the United States these days with a flash system. You throw a shutter, and it gives you a hundredth of a second, two words at a hundredth of a second, and you're supposed to be able to read those in that hundredth of a second, and so forth. And everybody flunked it. So we're making some progress. We're making some progress. At least we know now people can't see. That's development. All right, let's look at something very banal, something you know all about. You can relax your mind. Let's look at the subject of E-meter reading and ARC breaks. Relationship between. Module session, June 23rd, AD 12 as amended. Amended by the havingness being dropped out of the beginning rude. Gives us a weapon which exposes all else. As soon as we use that model session and repetitive rudiments, repetitive beginning rudiments, and repetitive prep checking, we have actually stripped the technology down to a very easy and very positive performance. It's very easy to do these things. You're not involved, you're not worrying about having to form what questions, you're not worrying about this and that. Actually, there are plenty of forms around to give you zero questions for this PC and that. And you yourself, dreaming up what might be wrong with the PC, can also dream up lists of zero questions for some particular PC, which you should be able to do. And the culmination of all that is the eradication of technical variables. And there's nothing there in the model session or its procedure or anything connected with what you are doing verbally and so forth with the PC that is open to very much question. Oh, you can argue around as to whether or not you get in the end, the middle roods by repetitive check or by fast check before you check the zero, and you can contend that if the middle roots were clean, then you shouldn't have to recheck the zero, which you should do. You should recheck the zero always. A lot of questions could come up, but frankly, none of these things are capable or susceptible to ARC breaks, capable of ARC breaking a PC or susceptible to creating ARC breaks. It's smoothed out to such a point that a performance done, relatively indifferently, would leave a PC improving, gaining, coming on up the line. And it exposes the simplicity of this existing technology. Also, the simplicity of routine 3GA. There's nothing complicated about 3GA. Exposes just one thing, and that's meter reading. You take all of these constants and you find out that you do them fairly well. You see, you don't have to do those perfectly to get a result. You should be able to do them perfectly. You should be able to put on a good show. But you shouldn't have to do them perfectly, you see, in order to obtain a result. I mean, the technology is very powerful. That particular approach to auditing is very powerful. And it leaves to view only one potential error. TR4 in one form or another. There's a TR4 phenomenon connected with the meter. And the meter, if poorly read, or only once in a while read wrong, operates to throw TR4 out in the session. See, the PC has a present time problem, and the auditor looks straight at the needle and says, after he said, "Do you have a present time problem? Do you have a present time problem? Do you have a present time problem?" And it got to that point where the PC says, "No, that's it." And then he looks at the meter and he says, "Do you have a present time problem?" And the thing falls off the pin, and the auditor says, "Do you agree that's clean?" He misses the read. Out goes TR4. See? That's out the window. Bang. Gone. Why? Well, the PC has an answer which the meter hasn't acknowledged. As far as he can see, remember he's looking at the back of the meter. As far as he can see, the meter has not acknowledged it. He then can start to get mad at the meter, but usually he isn't sufficiently clear thinking or directive enough to get mad at the meter. He doesn't quite know what he's getting mad at. And so he usually assigns the cause of his upset to something else. This assignment to something else all the time is, of course, why what a meter does in a session, if misread, has been obscured for so long. Of course, the meter did a perfectly good TR4, but the auditor interpretation or failure to read the meter does a bad TR4, and you get the same thing as though the PC had originated and the auditor didn't get it. So therefore you've hung the PC with a missed withhold. Similarly, PC sits there, "Do you have a present time problem?" The auditor says, "Do you have a present time problem? Do you have a present time problem? Do you have a present time problem?" Finally the PC says, "Oh, that's it. That's it." And the auditor looks at the meter. He says, "I'll check that on the meter." And says, "Do you have a present time problem?" And honestly, it's falling at an even rate, you know, that no disturbance of any kind whatsoever. And it just keeps on falling at this even rate. There's absolutely no change to the needle whatsoever. And the auditor says, "What's that? What's that? What was the problem? What is the problem?" And the PC says, "Well, there isn't any problem." And the auditor says, "I've got a read here." Okay. PC says, "What could it be?" And then he says, "Well, I haven't got a problem." And by this time, the needle is reading an ARC break characteristic. So he just says, "Do you have a present time problem?" Bang, the meter goes, you see. Every time, bang. See, "Do you have a present time problem?" Bang. "Do you have a present time problem?" Bang. See, clean to clean. And the only way he's going to get this off now is to ask if he's missed the withhold, the random rudiment. Sometimes the PC doesn't interpret it just like that. If you were to say, "Has my asking this question upset you?" And he answers it and says, "Yes, yes, it sure has," the read would then come off and it'd be clean again. Now, what's this all about? What's this all about? Basically, only one thing is occurring. And it's an old law which has been pretty well obscured, however, through the years, and has not come up much with importance. The importance has never really been assigned to this. It's been cruising around inside of Scientology technology for ages and ages and ages. And that is, you mustn't acknowledge a lie. Actually, you get yourself in trouble every time you acknowledge a lie. You accept a lie as the truth. That makes you a fool. Guy rushes up to you and he says, the whole of central downtown has just burned down, and it's all up in smoke, and 1,655,000 people have been killed. And you say, oh, good heavens, good heavens, good heavens, how terrible, how awful, or faint away, or something like that. Not stopping to realize that there aren't 1,655,000 people in the town, or in the whole state, for that matter. And he says, oh, good joke, you're a fool. Oh. What's this all about?
Very simple.
Prime postulate. Let's start learning to interpret things from routine 3GA. That makes you clears. And there's not much question about that. In fact, there's no question about it. The only time we've seen them held up is when the exact original specifications of routine 3GA were not rigorously, slavishly, and fantastically closely followed. For some reason or other, when I sat down to write the four lines out for routine 3GA, I scribbled them out as the potential, and I thought this would probably have to be varied for PC after PC, and you know, the only PCs that have gone clear are those who have exactly been run on those exact lines, the first four I wrote. You get any variation on it, the needle stick, tone arm goes up, everything goes to hell. That's sort of an oddity. It's an oddity. In the first place, the goal was probably originally framed in Amharic or lingua spacia or something like that, you know. And to hit the semantics of it right dead on the button and have that the only one that leads to a free needle is quite remarkable. I'll give you the datum, although this isn't a lecture about it. It's want. Who or what would want, exact statement of goal. Who or what would, these are not in sequence. Who or what would not want, exact statement of goal. Who or what would oppose, what is it, the participial form? The ing form of the goal. And who or what would not oppose the ing form of the goal. And it just has to be that. It isn't anything else. You can't say the goal, so-and-so. Who or what would want the goal, something or other, something or other. That's the way it's working out. I mean, it's fantastic. And this makes it look very silly. Let's get the goal not to eat pie. Who or what would not want not to eat pie is the wording of the line. There is no other wording. Who or what would not want not to eat pie? Makes sense to PC beautifully. And who or what would oppose not eating pie? Yeah, them's the words. Them's the magic words. And let's take this silly shift of pronouns. To kill myself, let's say, is the goal thing. Who or what would want to kill myself? Auditor sits there and reads to the PC. All right. Any more items here? Who or what would want to kill myself? It's fantastic. I mean, you can't say to kill yourself. You can't change the goal that much. So you can apparently horse it around all you want to agree with the English professors and miss clearing. That's apparently the magic code on this sort of thing. And it's doubly upsetting because you miss all the right items, and they become missed withholds then. So the tone arm goes up and sticks, and everything goes up and messes up and so forth. And session's hell to run, and can't hold the PC in session. You drive home in your Mercedes and feel like going off the curb. But it's just nothing but the slavish following into those lines. Well, I expect someday we find an exception to it. It isn't true just because I sat down and wrote those four lines as the first lines. It had nothing to do with it. But nothing else has ever brought a free needle. We're up to about 9 now, and they all go free on those wordings, and on any other wording, they don't go free. All right. I just interject that. 3GA is a demonstration of the similarity of construction between a reactive bank and a universe. And you've got the common denominator of the construction of something. The universe is formed by a prime postulate, which then alter is, makes matter, energy, space, and time. Maybe someday you can amuse yourself by speculating what that prime postulate might be. If enough of you hit it, why, the earth will start getting spongy, but don't let that scare you. Go ahead and run it out. If you get that tough and that strong, you could always mock up another one, couldn't you? Anyway, the PC has a basic purpose or a goal, and this is indistinguishable from prime postulate. He makes them at different stages of the track as he goes along, but he hadn't made too many. And therefore, you get your prime postulate as being the basic building block of a reactive bank. It's the goal, it's the basic purpose, and so forth. So that if you have a section of the reactive bank of the last trillion years, or something like this, or some strata of the reactive bank, actually it doesn't go exactly plotted against time. It goes kind of differently. It goes fundamentally. How basic is the basic purpose? And that sort of liable the first time to skim off what looks like the basic part of the whole time track. In actual fact, you've got, though, the basic purpose has occurred before an earlier track, and that's all sort of condensed in and it's become part of this cycle. So your basic purpose isn't something you can plot back on the E-meter and find and blow. You see? I won't go into any ramifications of that particularly. But there's this postulate, see? Now, the prime postulate would be the basic of the goal, purpose on which everything else would be stacked. You're not going to get it the first crack out of the box. So don't worry about it. You just take what you can get on a goals list. Now, the keynote of the formation of mass and spaces and everything else connected with the bank, that is the reactive bank, the keynote of it is alter is. And then the alter is suppresses down into a not is. Now you see the postulate is an is, and then you get an alter is, and then you get a not is, and you get the formation of matter, energy, space, and time contained in the bank. Now that is the most succinct, brief, correct, workable, demonstrable statement of the structure of the reactive bank and man. And also, in the field of the physical sciences, is the most direct and correct statement of the formation of the universe. It's demonstrable. In other words, the human mind merges simultaneously with the universe. You've got the parallels of their construction and evolution. In other words, the field of the mind is now on a parallel with your scientific sciences, because of course there is the field of the mind and then there is the universe. Not as everyone tends to believe, first there is the universe and then some fleas come along and light on it and develop their mental aberrations. It does not go this way. It goes quite the reverse. You have thetans and they develop reactive banks, and then you get, as a result of this, the formation of universes. The old technical data from way back, one's own universe and the environmental universe and all that sort of thing. Now that's quite important. That's important data. For any being to actually discover this data or start using it is fantastic, because it's totally in violation of mass. It's in violation of energy, it's in violation of space, it's in violation of time. So you're not supposed to do that. Slaves of the world succumb, you know. You're not supposed to fly in the teeth of this kind of thing. you find out information like that, how would people like the Pope and so forth make their coffee and cakes? Eh? I mean, be pretty grim. A lot of unemployment result, you know. Think of chain manufacturers. Bankrupt them. Look at political contracts for the constructions of jails and prisons. Up in smoke. No percentage for the politicians. Ruinous. Terribly revolutionary doctrines here. Now you want to know what starts the downward spiral on this sort of thing and how it gets denser and denser and denser is the acceptance of an alter isness as the fact. Now that is actually and basically what a Thetan knows way down deep that he must not do. And what every Thetan that ever got himself in trouble has done. He knows he must not accept an alter isness of the fact as the fact. He gets nervy when he starts to suspect this. And if he accepts too many of them, he goes into an overwhelm. He's overwhelmed by lies. And therefore, people who buy, let's take the worship of the god Woogie Wug or something like that. He's made out of mud and sticks in the middle of the Venusian jungles or something. And it's God Muggy Mug. And if everybody protests this God enough and protests the lie enough, and if the priesthood of Muggy Muggy is sufficiently brutal and overwhelming, and if they can collect to themselves enough overt acts, you see, it's very, very important. They've got to collect, get other people to commit overt acts against the God Muggy Muggy, see? And if everybody commits more and more overts against Muggy Muggy, and after a while, of course, gets totally overwhelmed by the god Muggy Muggy. Okay? And after that, you don't get a sane course of evolution from that point of acceptance of the god Muggy Muggy. See? You get zealotism, fanaticism, atheism. Everything that happens from that point tends to be chaotic. Because they have fought an untruth, they fought an alter is of the facts. Muggy Muggy did not make the Venusian mud. See? But that's the prime declaration of the religion of Muggy Muggy. Oh, Muggy Muggy, thou who hast madeth the muddeth. See? These birds used to get out in the morning and storm around and wake everybody up long before they were supposed to get wakened. Develop fast days, nobody's supposed to eat. You see. Games conditions, and so forth. And before you ate dinner, why, you were supposed to go out and heap some mud on your plate in respect to Muggy Muggy, you see. These things Satan's didn't like to do. So, of course, they would get protesting against Muggy Muggy, and then this untruth would overwhelm them. I use that quite deliberately because it has been religion which has been the strongest arguments and the strongest mechanisms which have brought about an alterisness of the mind and form have been religious mechanisms. You might even say it's a religious universe. And they get protested against most strongly. And Thetans get overwhelmed by them the most easily. And so on. This isn't my bigotry talking one way or the other. I listed it out the other day. It burned holes in the paper. And then found out that I felt the same way about it afterwards. Very interesting. The facts here are creation, assignment of. And you notice Muggy Muggy created mud and some. Or you've got somebody like Kali, the goddess of destruction, or something like that. They have something to do with the cycle of action, the great popular gods. See? And it's all an alterism. Macaulay had nothing to do with creating anything, neither did Muggy Muggy. See, that's the altar is the assignment of who created it. So that naturally is the biggest altar is that you could make, is the altar is of source. So therefore, that's what the most powerful overwhelms succeed the most powerful protests. And of course, they're in the field of the seventh and eighth dynamic. And, well, it's not for nothing that every year there were 100,000 Christians killed in Alexandria during the early days of Christianity. That sounds impossible, but yet the rosters and records do contain that fact. In any single year, there were more Christians killed in Alexandria by Christians than there were in all of the Roman purges. It's interesting. They protested harder amongst themselves than they ever really protested against anything else. And that's because they're wrapped up in a lie. See, they're wrapped up in an alter isness, the fact of creation. And it's hard to talk to you about this, because even as I speak, some people hearing this are still so enthralled in their overwhelm and protest along this particular religious lines on the seventh and eighth dynamic, that they say, oh God, listen to what terrible blasphemy, and that couldn't be true, you know. It starts off all the altar is on an automaticity in their head, and they say, well, he's just anti this and anti that. I'm not anti anything, except like any other right-minded thing, and I'm kind of anti-altar is. This is your most fruitful source, then, of lies and commotion, would be anything that had to do with creation. And you introduce an erroneous assignment of creativeness, or actually, less strongly, any part of the cycle of action, misassign, see, who created it, say something else created, and you'll get randomity all out of proportion to everything. Here's a kick for you sometime. Go into an art museum and look at Rembrandt and point out to your companions in a loud voice, particularly during an exhibition, a white tie exhibition or something like that, point out to your companions in a very loud voice the wonderful work done by Picasso. Amen, you'll have a riot on your hands. There's other people standing around. They will come over and they will correct you, and they will argue with you, and they will look at you with terrible contempt. They will come very misemotional about the whole thing. The guards and that sort of thing are liable to come up and start trying to eject you, or all kinds of unlikely things will occur, you know. You look at the Cavalier or something like that, and you say, now that actually is a very excellent example of Picasso's brown period. And go on and hold forth in great dissertation, or go over to the Royal Festival Hall or some such area, the music hall, and start talking outside when you hear, oh, it's something by Mussorgsky, you see, and you say, now that's by Stephen Foster. You'll get upset. Alter isness of the source of creation is the most fruitful source of upset and commotion, because, of course, it itself is the father of all chaos. If there's any chaos in the universe or any lack of order, it will be found by reason of a misassignment of who created it. We're liable to get so little upset on the subject of founders of countries and that sort of thing. Oh, we say George Washington, the founder of his country. Well, nobody much argue with you. You don't get in much mistake. I bet you could sit around for hours in the States in various popular and public places and say, George Washington founded, you know, his country. You could go on and do this and do this and do this, and nobody would ever do anything. They never say anything. It was generally accepted to be a fact, and it more or less is a fact, you see, and you're going to get no commotion, that's all. Well, if you said Marco Polo founded the United States of America, people would simply think you were insane. But if you came almost on the truth, see, and said Alexander Hamilton founded the United States of America and was its first president, you know, everybody's brains would go kind of creak, creak. You see, it's not, you know. He was at least alive at the same time, so it's a recognizable alteration. The truth of the matter is, there's probably anything wrong with the United States right now, it's George Washington. Now you get an argument about that because it's so much accepted to be truthful otherwise. See? The guy tore up the minutes and records of the Constitutional Convention. They were never published. He made sure they were burned. Nobody's been able to interpret the cockeyed Constitution since. And they keep changing it, you know, and trying to amend it and wondering what people meant by it and so forth. And nobody can find out because they threw it all away. That's a fact. You know, there are no minutes of the Constitutional Convention ever published. And I don't think it was until way into the 19th century sometime or another that somebody released a book on his demise, which gave something. I think he'd been the secretary of the convention, and he gave some of the data. And you got an operating machine now called the Constitution, which nobody is supervising, and it's starting to alter is, and itself was an alter is, and it's kind of going out of hand, and nobody can quite make any sense out of it, and the citizens have less and less liberty, but they don't quite know what to do about it, you see.
This lecture is continued on side...